Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. I am your host, Firecrow Silver Knight, and I have a crazy episode for you today. I do, for the first time, have to say there are some content warnings. This episode is called We Crave Death, and it's not really about suicidality, but I will go into that at some point because it's a part of my background, and I'm trying to frame how sort of intentionally and unintentionally modern life has become kind of watered down. And it's the idea of the way we go about what we value is actually not really supporting vibrant, lively life. It's kind of supporting a middle ground that we don't really recognize as a craving for nothing. And I'll talk about in the background of sort of suicidal mentality and what my personal experience of suicidal behavior has been, and my experience of talking to families who have lost loved ones to suicide. And so, kind of a trigger warning, if you are having thoughts and experiences that you have some intention of hurting yourself, there are many hotlines. One of them will be in the show notes. Please, please go to an emergency room. They are very good at taking care of you while the crisis passes. And I do believe it is temporary. Even if you don't, I believe that deeply enough for both of us. That not being the case, the hotlines can help with sort of non-emergency crisis level. And then after that, my honest advice as someone who has survived suicidal ideation several times, one time which involved going to a hospital, it is this. Don't ever stop feeling your feelings and don't ever stop talking to people. The way suicidality actually works is it convinces you that no one is listening, and that may be true on an individual basis, but it is not true overall. And as long as you keep talking to people, I believe you can weather the storm. I'm also going to talk a bit about why it is that I feel like it's important to talk about the sort of pursuit towards sterility and non-lifeness that's led to kind of dysfunction. And I'll start that by talking interestingly about the paradox, which is on one hand, it looks like society is being run by a group of supervillains. And then upon closer inspection, they all seem like such idiots. And that's such a strange thing to sit with. Like, how if this is some grand design to take over, you know, a country full of so many intelligent and vibrant people, are the sort of agents of our demise such screw-ups? And I have a very simple explanation for that, that I will get into after the break. But for now, I'll give a small update on Compare Basics. So I've spent the last sort of month or two mostly taking care of my actual income, my day job. Being back in restaurants is fantastic. Finally feel like I've broken into the line cook space as someone who like actually can do this, not just like someone who can, you know, do it some of the time. I've had a few really, really busy shifts. I can cook the entire menu where I work and, you know, be someone in the kitchen who really makes sure that, you know, people get their food and it's cooked well and they're happy about it. And that feels wonderful. It also means that I took a look at the code for Seneca that I wrote in a panic and deleted a whole bunch of stuff. But it looks like that foray into Python was fantastic because it really did surface the components I had built that were just a bit too complex. It's like, it's cool that I can write complex stuff, but the kind of like multi-tiered handler for web requests, that's gone. The crazy complex nested hierarchy template engine, that's gone. And as I rolled these things back, I finally really nailed down the memory manager efficiency, and it is a beautiful thing. And I'm hoping it's the kind of simple, really core concept that can lead not just to a fantastic runtime, but to really, really good computer science education so that this becomes a explanation of computing as well as a computing system. So I'll make an admission. I found a piece of the economic puzzle of our time that has me stumped. I don't have an answer to this. And to put that in context, I have been sort of blurring the lines of qualification and always overcoming my sort of job hoppiness and clear sort of carelessness towards sort of authority structures and, very obvious admission that I'm kind of a personality conflict person at work, and making up for that by having some nuanced skill set within technology or talking about my elaborate home cooking and cleaning strategies. And so I've always had some way to overcome the challenges I can see, and there have always been challenges, and I've always kind of been able to walk through the flames unscathed kind of thing. But this thing that I have found about the economy has me truly stumped, and here's what it is. So the circumstances of achievement are very nuanced in that it basically involves some pressure and some support. If you're too poor to do anything about the things you know need to be improved, you are unable to act on them. And if you are too comfortable to be exposed to the challenges, you are out of touch and unable to act on them as well, even if you have, all the resources and support in the world. So that middle ground of struggle and resources, the time to think through something, but also the exposure to experience something you would not have chosen to experience, it's what creates the sort of magical overcoming challenge growth that produces the actual stuff that the economy actually derives wealth from, and then it gets, bought and sold and traded and all that kind of stuff. But this combination of pressure and support is what actually creates stuff and services, and it's where wealth actually comes from before we, categorize it in, money over here, money over there. For some reason, capitalism is designed to take people who find that perfect balance and remove them from that perfect balance. So once you have the conditions to be successful, you are flushed with so much responsibility, so much demand, maybe in the form of so many orders from customers that you can't handle them, or so much wealth that you spend all your time moving into a more comfortable place, changing your friends groups, going on vacation. You don't have that combination of the exposure to what needs to happen and the resources to do something about it. And so basically, capitalism has been producing idiotic business people since the beginning of capitalism. It just can't stop spitting them out. And so I'm looking at this and going, wow. I don't actually think this is the grand design of a few brilliant people or even the pile up of a whole bunch of the mentality of a bunch of cynical people. I think that those cynical people are taking advantage of a bad situation. And I think the economists who have been trying to gaslight everybody and that everything is fine may or may not have been aware of this because honestly, when I look at it, I don't know what to do. I mean, a worker-owned company has the value of people who are involved actually making decisions. That's kind of a start, but they won't face the same circumstances that made them such an amazing, corner store, hole-in-the-wall restaurant, manufacturing company when they were, fresh out of college before they all had kids and they're hungry, or, they've just been through the stress of parenting and now their kids are teenagers and they're fresh with ideas from all they've been through. Those moments in time don't happen again. And so, no matter what the circumstances are, if you are an inspirational problem solver because you have kids, or you're an inspirational problem solver because you don't yet have kids, or you're an inspirational problem solver because you're 85 years old and you've seen a whole bunch of stuff, those moments won't happen again. And so, as capitalism rewards people for a moment in time and gives them authority as if that moment will exist forever, it slowly creates inaccurate, idiotic leadership. And I don't know what to do about this. But what I will say, or what the episode title is actually about, is that it's come to my attention that our approach to food safety is quite literally dead things are safe. Like, We heat things to a temperature where all the bacteria grows. We use chemical solutions such as bleach and vinegar that provide acidity, or salt, which has a very strange dehydrate the molecules even in a liquid solution, which is confusing and very interesting. But generally speaking, the deader the better when it comes to food safety. And now it's come to the attention of a number of scientists, and it's, you know, probiotics are all the rage. You know, gut bacteria, gut biome supposedly even creates serotonin, which may be as powerful as antidepressants for alleviating depression. And so we have a gut biome in our body that needs to be very much alive, that we keep feeding dead stuff. So unless you're eating fresh fruits and veggies or a select set of cultured foods, I believe, such as kimchi. I'm not sure if soy sauce actually has any live cultures in it. I know that it's fermented as producing its flavor. If you're not eating those things on a regular basis, kombucha, you know, various mushrooms, then basically most of the American diet is just eating dead stuff. And so we have this belief that bacteria will kill us, and so we have decided to eat things that are not a threat, but also not good for us. And I feel the same way about people who say, oh, I just don't want the drama. My general response is, well, I don't want the boredom. And that's incredibly offensive in a certain sense, because people are like, are you going to bring the drama? And there have been times that I have. There have been times that I was in workplaces where I knew that as long as an issue that was happening on a small scale, it would go unsolved, possibly forever. And I decided to make it bigger. And the saddest thing is that then it was solved. When I didn't deliver a project that I could have taken steps to deliver, to highlight a dysfunctional thing on the team that then got the attention from the managers and they actually addressed it, I went home happy. I had caused drama intentionally and I went home happy. And that's disgusting. I know that. But consider this. No one watches a movie or plays a video game where the hero grows up in a suburban neighborhood, goes to a good school, and gets a job that they keep forever. No one would watch that movie. No one would make it through the streaming service because it's boring. And so I feel like, just like in our diet and culinary world, we've really gone after this, if it's dead, it's safe. We have a similar approach to the careers we advocate for our kids. We have a similar approach to the business strategies that get tossed around the boardroom, or our political candidates, don't talk about that, it's controversial, don't take a stand on that, it's controversial. And as a result, we get just like such watered down, dumb elections that have now led to some of the most terrible things I never thought I would see happen in America. And so we watch movies that are full of drama. We browse social media, totally full of drama. Music, it's intense, it's emotional. I kind of want to make friends with people who say, hey, can you tell me something emotional? Can you tell me something dramatic? Can we go out and experience some crazy, intense, challenging things that make us really feel like we're alive? And can we eat some raw food that's full of flavor, quite possibly fermented? Because I think it's about time we take a good look at what life means here in the great US of A. In 2026, because I'm starting to feel a bit like we are craving death. And my personal experience of being suicidal is that I am a person who knows a lot about human physiology through my study of martial arts, and I'm just a curious dude. And also, I know a lot about mechanical power leverage, you know, a little bit of, not a whole lot of like physical engineering, but definitely a lot of what momentum can do and how to build things, how to break things. And what I found is that when my life got to a point where the purpose was gone for personal reasons I won't get entirely into, but basically I had plenty of money, I had a good career. I was in the process of the end of my first marriage, and that was very tough. But I had a family that, you know, I was still in touch with. We had good conversations. Generally speaking, my life looked pretty good on paper, but the purpose was missing. What happened was my subconscious mind began solving the problem of me being alive, as if dying was a good thing. And it was like a movie playing in the back of my mind. Oh, you could die this way, you could die this way, you could die this way. And I definitely won't go into what they are, because if anyone listening to this is anywhere near that, believe me, you are not going to want more strategies bouncing around your head. And it was the weirdest thing. It was like if you were hungry and you began coming up with various ways to get food, and you can't stop, no matter what you try to do, you can't stop thinking about this type of food, that type of food, maybe I could go there. It's because there's a problem-solving side of our minds that solves whatever problem it thinks is best for us, whether it is under our conscious direction or not. And in my opinion, because I'm, you know, a patient, not a doctor, I've done a whole bunch of research, I've talked to people who have survived, you know, friends and loved ones who have taken their own lives, but I'm not actually a doctor, so this is from my experience. It just kind of seems like that problem-solving derangement engine in your mind gets pointed really in the wrong way. And my experience of creating death is quite literally creating death with plans and compulsions, and it gets more, it starts to feel better and better over the weeks and months that I experienced it. It started to feel better and better, and that was the most terrifying part. Like, at first it was like, that's terrifying, I would never do that. And then as it got, you know, warmer and more appealing, I eventually checked myself into a psych hospital, and I was just like, look, like, I did have a friend who explained to me that, like, what I was explaining to them didn't end well. And I basically just told the doctors, I don't think I can walk out of this one alive, because it's growing and I can't stop it, and I have the talent to pull it off. What I'm seeing in my own head is convincing in a terrifying way. And so when I think about the amount of discussion of, oh, I don't want the drama of, oh, that person's just always in a bad mood, I don't want to hear about it. And then they watch like reality TV that's all about the drama. They watch movies that are all about the drama. I can't help but wonder if there is a loss of purpose that is resulting in a self-sabotage aspect that is not actually suicidality, but it's in the same direction. It's kind of like, here's the question I would pose at the end of this. Are we as Americans, and is American culture sanitizing our lives the way we sanitize our food, with the belief that dead things can't hurt us? With that, I'll see you next week.